behind-the-scenes look of Smashville's team. This is Preds Insiders with Adam Vingan. Smashville lives here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game and the Game Nashville Sports Network.
Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Adam Vingan here with you on Wednesday evening. The Nashville Predators have won their first game of the season, a 4-0 win against the Boston Bruins last night at Bridgestone Arena. Joining me this week, the one and only Chris Mason, Predators television analyst for the now FanDuel Sports Network. Chris, hopefully you said FanDuel as many times as possible. There were no slip-ups with Bally last night.
I leave that to Willie, and Willie and Lindsay take care of that, and they nailed it. Actually, I did say it a couple times, mostly in the post game, but yeah, it was good. No slips. Everything went well. We're excited, and it's a good new chapter, I think. Not everybody had the best taste in their mouth when you heard the name Bally, so I think this is it's a great move, and we're excited about it for sure.
Speaking of no slips and everything going well, the Nashville Predators 0-5-0 entering last night's game against the Boston Bruins, the only team in the NHL without a standings point. They win convincingly 4-0 against the Boston Bruins. Ryan O'Reilly, Luke Evangelista, and Roman Josi with multi-point nights. Ryan O'Reilly and Luke Evangelista, one goal, one assist each. Roman Josi, two assists. Tommy Novak also gets on the board, as well as Gus Nyquist. Now, Chris, you only can play the teams that are in front of you on the schedule, but I do think it's an extra feather in the Predators' cap, so to speak, that they won their first game and did so convincingly against a team the caliber of the Boston Bruins, one of the best and toughest teams in the NHL season in and season out. So the word that came to mind for me watching the game last night from the Predators' perspective is the word that we heard used a lot last season to describe the Predators. They even had it written on hats: relentless. What was your evaluation of the Predators' first win of the season, a 4-0 win against the Boston Bruins on Tuesday?
Yeah, I think I agree with that, and I'll preface that because I think the previous games before, we didn't see that. There might have been some stretches, and I think the mentality was a little bit like, hey, we were really good last year, and we've added, you know, all these players. We have Stamkos now and Marchessault and Brady Shea, and maybe we don't have to be as relentless and we can still win. And I think, you know, maybe the first two games, you know, you lose a couple and you're like, okay, well, we gotta crank it up. You lose again, and all of a sudden you start self-doubting. Your team starts doubting yourself, and you, as an individual and as a player, and you get to 0-5, and that was a massive game for me. Not only do you want to go 0-6, but just to see, you know, what this team is made of early. Nobody expected them to face this kind of adversity. I mean, on paper, that's a team that, even if they don't have their A game or play their best hockey, should be able to squeak a win out of five games. And the fact that they weren't able to do that, and they responded that way, and it was almost like, all right, guys, enough's enough. Let's go. And we need everybody. We know what we have to do to be successful. New guys, get on board. Let's all go out there and everybody bring their best. And I thought they did that. I thought, including Saros, I thought, you know, so far Saros has been good, not great. He hasn't let any bad goals or soft goals or anything like that, but he hasn't made, you know, he hasn't had a game where he made that big save, that, you know, the one where they get a goal and the other team, you know, quick strikes back and gets a 2-on-1 or a breakaway, and he makes that save. They've been letting those in, and again, they're not bad goals, but it's just not that effort that you need when the team's in that situation. But that's what this team looks like when they are successful. That's the way that they have to play. So I agree with you, and especially against the opponent. It's never an easy game against the Bruins. And even, you know, Jeremy Swayman's, he's had the Preds number since he's been in the league, 3-0, two shutouts. They were able to get to him. And I just thought, you know, there was different points in that game where everybody contributed. The fourth line had been struggling this year so far, and you know, they were a big part of the team last year, and this team's going to need the depth. And I thought they were really good Yeah, I thought everybody was good. That's more like it.
You could certainly hear the relief from the players in the dressing room after the game. This was Ryan O'Reilly, who had a goal and an assist last night after the game, a 4-0 win against the Boston Bruins.
Oh, gosh, yeah, feels feels very good. Yeah, I thought just as a group, though, as a whole, our intensity was much better. And again, not a perfect game, still made mistakes, but just the way we kept fighting, you know, we were stronger on battles and played and talking more. And yeah, we found a way to do it. And that's a great lesson for us. Kind of that feeling out there, that intensity is what we have to keep bringing. That's how we're going to get out of this hole.
That was Ryan O'Reilly after the game last night. And Chris, in your career, inevitably you were part of long losing streaks. This was the Predators' worst 5-game start in franchise history. A lot, as you mentioned, a lot of expectations on this team entering the season because of all of the money they spent in free agency, the caliber of players they brought in free agency. But from a player's perspective, when you are going through a rough patch and you finally break through and get a win, regardless of how it comes about, what can that do for the psyche of a dressing room when that weight is lifted off your shoulders?
Well, it can immediately, it changes your mindset. It all that noise. And believe me, when these guys lose games like that, and it's such a, and you're right, you hear that relief out of Ryan O'Reilly, because it's even so much more magnified at the beginning of the season because they had all this, the excitement. They're like, all right, let's just, you know, they're in the preseason. Let's get to the regular season. You know, we want to get going, all this kind of stuff. And I think that's how everybody, you know, collectively felt around the team. And all of a sudden, you know, you run into a brick wall or get hit by a freight train, you know, when this team's 0-4, then they're 0-5. You're like, oh my God, you know, it's over. They're not going to make playoffs and all, you know, those sort of things start going, you know, through everybody's head, which is unreasonable really. But that's as a player, that's what happens. Maybe we're not as good as we thought we were, you know, all these types of things. I mean, it's 82 games, you know, the ups and downs. It's inevitable that during the season, I mean, we've all covered sports for years and years and years, and I don't care how good the team is, at some point, you know, you're going to go through something like that. I guess you hope it's not at the beginning of the season, because you put your team behind the eight ball at the start and you have to play a little bit of catch up. But, you know, the fact that they were able to get back and do the right things, I think, you know, it proves to them that, okay, guys, we're good. This is what we have to do. We can't mess around. We've got to get down to the basics. We've got to simplify a little bit, which they did. I thought all the, you know, 5-on-5 is really where they've been struggling in the first 5 games. Last night, I thought it was by far their best effort, 5-on-5. You know, oddly enough, the power play has been not bad, hasn't been great. I think going into last night, they were 16th or 17th. The penalty kill has been a really good bright spot for the team early, but the 5-on-5 play and just putting the whole game together, I think as a player, all of a sudden it just instantly disappears, you know, all that weight. Now, having said that, it's one game, right? You got to go into Chicago. They play Chicago on Friday, and they got to follow that up with an effort, you know, similar to the Bruins game. And, you know, you're going to lose games. You're going to play like that. You're going to lose games. But I think, you know, as a team and as a fan base, I mean, you can live with that. We saw that last season. If this team goes out there, they leave it all on the ice, they play hard, and you come up short, well, that's a different story. But if this team is able to play like they did last night with that effort, they're going to win a lot of hockey games, because, you know, the talent hasn't even got going yet, really. You know, Stamkos is getting chances. Marchessault is getting chances. He's put up a couple points, but those guys are nowhere near to the level that that they'll be at some point this season. So that's a big win. You know, the old can't get too high, don't get too low scenario pops in, but that's a good one to just get all that weight and get all that negative energy out of there in an instant. So we'll see if it really, you know, pays dividends and how they come out on Friday.
I agree with you about the 5-on-5 play last night. It was their best performance in that regard. And I heard Mike Kelly, who works for SportLogic and is an NHL analyst. You can see him on NHL Network and Sportsnet. Really good at what he does. He coined the Predators the perimeter Predators. I heard him say that after the game against the Oilers last week, because although the Predators led the NHL in shots on net per game, they were one of the worst teams in the NHL at getting to the inside and taking shots on net from the home plate area, that slot area right in front of the net where the majority of goals in the league are scored. Two goals at 5-on-5 last night for the Predators came in the slot. Tommy Novak's goal and Gus Nyquist's goal. Three total slot goals when you include Ryan O'Reilly's power play goal. But one thing the Predators clearly did better last night than they did in the first five games is find ways to penetrate that home plate area. And to bring up the point about the Bruins, I was talking about this with Willie Donick yesterday on our midday show. The Bruins' defense, and I know you highlighted this on the broadcast, they're gigantic. So the fact that the Predators were able to do that against a team the size of the Boston Bruins, I think is a positive sign as well.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And that's what was, to me, was so baffling about the start to the season, because, I don't know, I think it was like the last 30 games, they were either the second or third top scoring team in the entire league. And that's how they scored goals. I mean, Philip Forsberg smashed his number of goals from the interior. It was 70%, I think, his next highest season was 40% from that area that you were talking about, right around the net. And that's just how they played every single game, and it was every single guy would be willing to do that. And they would rarely lose that battle in terms of, you know, net front type of shots and battles in tight, and they would find ways to get there. And this season, it has not even been close. And I think sometimes when we touched on it a bit early, when you get those high level skill players added to your team that you collectively think, hey, maybe we can outskill them and we can make the perimeter plays and we're going to look for that east-west, you know, kind of pretty play, that the cute kind of hockey. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. Those plays open up when you continually go to the net. You drive defenses down, you drive them, you get them to collapse, you get them to overcommit because you go there all night, and it's almost like, you know, training a dog or just ingraining in their minds that, oh, we got to go back to the net. We got to go back to the net. Then you collapse, and then you have to expand coverage. But that's when seams open up, and that's when those types of, pretty plays open up. If you don't do that, you're easy to defend because the defenders don't have to move. They just have to stay in the middle of the ice and pick your stuff off because, you know, they can get out on you because they know you're not coming to the net. And the fact that they were able to do that, because Boston's defense corps is massive, but they're by far the biggest in the league. Like Nikita Zadorov, their smallest guy is Charlie McAvoy, 6'1", 210. The guy hits like a freight train. He's one of the best two-way defensemen in the league. They got a really good core, and their forwards play hard defensively and gritty. So the fact that they were able to do it, again, that goes back to the mindset saying, all right, guys, you know, enough's enough. Quit messing around here. We know who we are. Don't try to be something we're not. Let's get back to it. And they were able to do it against a very good team. They could have easily, you know, played a really solid game and come up short and lost that game, but they found a way to win. And the difference was they found a way to get to that area. So it's just it's a reminder, I think, to the team how hard they have to play and how much they have to commit to that style.
Coming up next on Preds Insiders, Professor C. Mace is going to take us to school on a subject we hear a lot about in hockey. We'll do that next. Adam Vingan with Chris Mason, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vingan joined this week by Chris Mason, a man of many talents. I thought this would be a great opportunity for us to learn a little something from Chris. There is a word that we use and hear a lot when discussing the game of hockey, which is a word I feel like not everybody understands. And sometimes I even struggle to understand it. And that word is system. We hear it a lot when we're discussing teams and coaches. The Predators' system. Andrew Brunette's system. And when the Predators were struggling at the start of the season, I saw a lot of Predators fans talk about Andrew Brunette's system and whether it's too complicated for players to learn quickly. We saw how long it took the Predators to adjust to it last season. The 0-5-0 start this season certainly led to people wondering about Andrew Brunette's system. So Chris is here. We'll call him Professor C. Mace for the purpose of this conversation. Professor, let's just start with the basics, and then we'll get into the nitty-gritty a little bit. What is the foundation of Andrew Brunette's system?
The foundation and his philosophy is he wants to possess the puck, which everybody does, And when they don't have it, he wants the guys to work even harder to get it back. So it's a lot of skating. It's very demanding. In the defensive zone, in the offensive zone, you're skating all over the ice. He designs his practice, every single one of his practices, with this much skating. Even their pregame skates, you could argue, are harder than almost anybody else in the league, just because of the demand that he puts on the guys in terms of how much he has them skate. It's to play fast. It's not to play stationary. And the biggest part that guys have issue with it, or that have problem picking it up, is in the defensive zone, because in his system, he wants you to almost forget maybe everything that's been ingrained in you as a hockey player in the defensive zone, because he wants you to come back. I'll just try to make it as simple as possible. In a traditional sense, you're going to come back and you're going to support the puck. You'll be, you know, if the other team has possession, you'll be fairly stationary. And then once you do get possession, you're either going to have somebody that's a talented defenseman like Roman Josi skated out of the zone. If you remember a couple years ago, he led the NHL in zone exits, defensive zone exits and entries. So meaning that he'd be taking the puck from the defensive zone all the way through the neutral zone into the offensive zone. And in Bruno's opinion, and if you watch the way that they play, that's slow. Even though Roman Josi is one of the best skaters, he's one of the most gifted skaters in the league and has the ability to do that. And so it takes a while for players to get that out of their system. He wanted Roman Josi. It took him a while to get this. He wanted Roman Josi. Okay, you're good. You get possession. You make an evasive move and then move the puck and then join the rush. I want you to be the secondary attack. I want that puck moving up into the neutral zone, which he's got to get to a forward that is forgetting or trying to forget everything that has been ingrained in their mind since they've started playing hockey. In most systems, you come back, you support the puck, you leave the zone either as four or five, you come out together, you try to, you know, break team systems with a 5 or 10 foot pass. Maybe one guy will blow the zone and try to take his D-man deeper into the neutral zone, so it maybe opens up a little bit of space, or you have that one side of the defensive zone open to get out. But Andrew Brunette wants these guys to, as soon as you anticipate possession, these guys, and watch next time, they're blowing the zone. They're turning, and they're all pushing the coverage out. And if their defensemen don't go, then you're behind their defenseman. They'll leave the zone, and essentially that's going to stretch the neutral zone and the ability to move the puck past one defender, have more space to carry the puck with speed. You're getting speed because you're turning and then skating out of your zone. As soon as you see somebody like Roman Josi get the puck, he's moving it, then he's slashing through. He's beating his guy and he's joining the rush. And hopefully, in theory, that's going to create more odd man situations. And we haven't seen it much this year. But if you look at Brady Shea, somebody that doesn't know the system, I think a lot of times you can see, and now that, you know, you kind of have an idea of maybe what it is, he's starting to get it. But at the beginning, he would get the puck. And he's a very talented, he's an elite player and he's an elite skater. He can get the puck and skate through. And when they've been disconnected, you'll see him get the puck. Everyone's already out of the zone, but then they have to stop. They're stationary waiting in the neutral zone because your defenseman's skating the puck out. And that's not playing fast in Bruno's system. So he's starting to, you know, almost you have to forget, or at least develop the muscle memory and get the repetitions for this to become how you play. And so you don't have to think about it. Instead of, I remember Colton Sissons after training camp last season says, because this is a guy, he's a defensive-minded player. This has been a defensive-minded team. You're coming from John Hines, who's extremely defensive-minded, and going into, you know, a system with Andrew Brunette where he's like, no, I don't care. He's like, I want you to attack. I want you to essentially cheat. I want you to anticipate our possession. We have skilled defensemen. This is a skill league. We don't have to be the fastest skaters to play fast and be the fastest team. And so when you come back into the defensive zone as a forward, you almost have to say, oh yeah, I'm supposed to go now. You know, and by the time you do that, you know, it's a split second too late, and maybe not everybody's doing it at the same time or when they're supposed to. So that's kind of what you're seeing right now. Some of it is the new guys, but some of it is the guys from last year, because I think, you know, you need a reminder of how quick and sharp you have to be mentally to play like that. And if one guy's off, it just doesn't work quite well. So you need everybody with that mindset, and it's like any system, you know, one weak link in the cog, and it's not quite as effective. But I think in terms of the 5-on-5, you saw a better version of that against the Bruins. So next time, just watch what the D-men do. You guys probably remember, you know, Roman Josi used to be able to skate it up the ice every time if he wanted. And Bruno's okay. Yeah, do that once in a while because you've got that skill and you've got to change it up. But ideally, in a perfect world, the fastest way to play is to get position. The forwards are anticipating possession, and then move that puck, join the rush. He wants the defenseman to be that secondary option instead of leading the rush.
So you use the word speed. And when people think speed, they think foot speed, skating speed, being able to get up and down the ice as quickly as possible. And the Predators certainly do have some fleet-footed skaters, but there's also processing speed and being able to think the game quickly. How much of Brunette's system is that versus just being able to skate up the ice as fast as you can?
It's all thinking. It is really. If you could get him on, he's genius level type of IQ with sports and the way he sees the game, and you know, the way that he watches other sports and tries to, you know, figure out how you can do something, you know, let's say in soccer, and how to use open space. And he's really, you know, revolutionary in the way that I think he wants guys to play. And I think you just the more that you pay attention to this, and for a player, you're fighting your instincts all the time until you get it, and you're like, oh, okay, this works. And guys love playing it. They love playing it because, you know, I remember, if I'm going back to, let's say, John Hines era and that team, you had a team that they battled, they played hard. I would say they were really structured defensively. They could play those types of games. But they didn't possess the puck a lot. You know, they didn't win that battle a lot. They were able to sustain, you know, a lot of offensive zone attacks from the other team and really play hard that way and maybe not give up, a ton of scoring chances. But they weren't able to win that possession battle night in, night out. The way Andrew Brunette has these guys, you know, maybe that's not a fair, you know, they have different teams and different personnel. But the way Andrew Brunette coaches his team is, you would think it's a little more risky, a little more aggressive. They don't really compromise the defensive side of things, but they will take chances to create offense. And it's been extremely successful. I thought they were one of the best puck possession teams in the league last year, with a team that at the beginning of the year I thought might struggle to do that, because I was thinking, how are you going to play this offensively minded system with a team that really you didn't know where the scoring was going to come from? And it goes back to that interior, and those are the other parts of his system. Is that area is how they're going to win hockey games. You know, you talked about Mike Kelly in the perimeter, and that's exactly what I thought in the first five games. I'm like, yeah, they're getting a lot of shots, but have they really tested the other goalie? Have they really made the other team, you know, have to work in the interior? And that's the other part. Is he stresses that, and it's not just the guys that, you know, is always going to go there. O'Reilly's always going to go there. There's, you know, Marchessault will be around there. There's certain guys that's what they do, but he wants everyone. And Phil went there, and Phil saw, he's like, holy smokes, I'm at the best year of my career. What did I do different? Well, I went to the net. I changed the way I play. I changed the way I think about scoring, you know, and everybody knows, and it's hard. And I think you saw the best version of Philip Forsberg. We all know he's a star. I think last year he became a superstar because he added that to his game, and he's a lot more engaged night in, night out, most consistent season of the year, because you have that staple, something that no matter if you're feeling great or you're feeling on or you're hot, that you can always go to the net. You can always get a greasy goal. If that's part of your game, I feel that helps a player like Forsberg be able to remain more consistent throughout the season, because that's a staple that will always work even if you're not at your best. And I thought everybody bought in, and they love this system once they get it, because, hey, you get to play with the puck more. You get to cheat. You don't have to do all the stops and starts and, hey, wait till we leave the zone, or wait till the centerman gets it at low support and then we can go. They're going, and they can play fast. And when they're able to execute it, it's fun to watch, and it's very effective.
we knew that there would be an adjustment period for the new players, specifically with Steven Stamkos, because when you spend 16 seasons with one organization, you used the word instinctual earlier, Steven Stamkos had to learn a whole new way of doing things after leaving Tampa Bay and coming to Nashville. Andrew Brunette is still trying to find that perfect second line combination. Steven Stamkos has been the lone constant on that line. The Predators have not scored a goal at 5-on-5 this season when Steven Stamkos has been on the ice. What have you made of his adjustment to this system? And is there a version of the second line you think works best with the players they have on the team currently?
Yeah, that's tough. I think you talk about all three of the guys they got, but you know, Stamkos, 18 years in one spot. That is just totally you have to rewire everything. Not only your visual and your optics and going into this same place every single day for 18 years and you know, doing everything that he's doing right now is new. It's a lot. It is a lot. And he's very good at the media and he's very savvy and you know, he's able to, you know, articulate it in a way where everybody knows it's an adjustment, but it's okay and it's fun. But it is hard, let me tell you. But his play 5-on-5, they just, you know, I remember last year when Jason Zucker and Anthony Beauvillier came in and Bruno tried them on the first line, on a line together. And it just didn't work because they didn't have enough reps. They couldn't get rid of the, I would say, old habits, you know, but old ways of playing and just the standard way that most teams play in those situations. And it's tough when you have one guy, you know, that doesn't really know, and it's taken him a minute to maybe want this shift, he gets it, but his winger, you know, Marcia, so maybe he's like, oh yeah, I got to go on that situation. And it's just off. Right. And so I think this is something that'll probably take time because I think Bruno really wants to obviously have Stamkos and Marchessault, doesn't want Stamkos to play center. And they've tried everything. I thought Sissons was better with them last game, and they're starting to make some plays and keep the puck in, and they got a couple chances, and they're a lot more threatening than I think they've been. But to me, if you're going to have that second line, and I know that Novak, Evangelista, and Jankowski have had some good chemistry. They're a great line for the team last season. But to me, if you're going to have the most successful version of that line, Novak is the guy with the skill set that I think complements both Stamkos and Marchessault because they're shooters. Tommy Novak is a player that is very high hockey IQ. He's an excellent playmaker. He's a guy that can hang on to the puck. He can keep possession. He can make plays. He can bring coverage and make that nifty play when he's on. And you're starting to see him do that on the third line. But he's got to be the second line player, you know? And so to me, he's the guy and that has the skill set that would make that line most effective. And what Andrew Brunette's doing right now is because, you know, things aren't going well. He knows he can trust, you know, the Novak, Evangelista, Jankowski line. They've been good. They're solid. They have chemistry. They played together. Okay, that line's good. The fourth line, you just put LaRue on there. Okay, we know they were solid last year. They got off to a slow start. I know that line. I'll figure it out. That line set. The top line, yep, we got that line. They're set in stone. They've been playing well. They seem to be getting better every game. That second line, eventually, I think that you just have to find a way, you know, to make Novak that player. And he's got to perform in that situation. He's got to perform when he gets that opportunity. So hopefully the more that they get the reps and they get the time together, that maybe that's something that'll materialize and pan out.
Coming up next on Preds Insiders, we'll get into UC Saros. There is a perception of UC Saros, which I, after doing some digging, looks to be true. And I will get Chris's thoughts on that. Coming up next, Adam Vingan with Chris Mason, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vingan joined this week by Chris Mason. UC Saros, a 33-save shutout last night in the Predators' 4-0 win against the Boston Bruins. Of course, his best performance of the season. And Chris, there is something about UC Saros that gets brought up a lot. and it's that he's a slow starter. And I did a little digging and found some numbers that would seem to back that up. So I'll share them with you now. These are UC Soros' career numbers in the month of October, including last night. He's played 43 games with a 2.82 goals against average and .905 save percentage. UC Soros in November, 47 games, 3.03 goals against average, .901 save percentage. Soros in December, 48 games, 2.32 goals against average, .924 save percentage. So a big jump in goals against average and save percentage from October to December. So although UC Soros did get his first win of the season along with the rest of the team last night, it's pretty clear that UC Soros is indeed a slow starting netminder. In your opinion, why do you think that is?
Well, there's two theories that I have. And one is, I think a lot of it, you are a product of what's in front of you. I know there's games and the elite guys can, change that in terms of, numbers and wins and things like that to a certain extent. But I feel that the team in general has been slow starting. But for Soros in particular, you can just tell there's a look that he has. And I think you guys have seen him enough and seen enough goaltenders. But when you see a guy night in, night out, you get their tendencies. You can just tell the way that, they're making saves or the goals that go in. I mean, there's some nights where you watch a goal and you're like, well, they're not going to score. They're just not going to score unless it goes off somebody or something, crazy happens. And then there's other nights where you're like, oh man, it looks like everything could possibly go in. And for Soros, I felt, and he has been a slow starter, and it's not like he's been bad. I mean, the numbers that you just said aren't bad, but they're not UC Soros-esque numbers. And if you look at his second half and December on in his career, he's been elite. He's one of those guys that once he gets to that level, and once he gets going, he's able to keep that and sustain it for long periods of time. And for whatever reason, everyone's so different at the beginning of the season. I hate that he got hurt, to be honest with you, because I thought in the preseason, I'm like, oh, wow, he came in and he's ready to go because he had that look. He had that. I could just tell his mentality. He didn't have the contract looming over his head. He didn't have all the scar off noise. And you think, well, come on, like you're an NHL goalie, you're an all-star. How does this stuff bug you? These guys are human, and it does. And I know for a fact that, that was something that was on the back of his mind at times last year. He ended up figuring it out. And as the season goes on, you just go and play. But I felt he looked different coming into camp. And then he got that little lower body injury on that last preseason game. And I think that throws your timing off. And all of a sudden you're trying to rehab and then get out there and you haven't really practiced. And then you're behind the eight ball again. And there were parts, I think, within the first couple games where I thought he looked really on. But when he is, there's a look that he has. And for whatever reason, he has been a perennial kind of slow starter. And there's other guys that come out of the gates. You look at Connor Hellebuck, he's always been a fast starter. Vasilevsky, he's, some guys just always get off to a good start. And, if I'm going to pick one or the other, I want the guy that's going to finish strong. And I guess you're hoping that can translate into some playoff success. And there's a lot of, things that go hand in hand with that. And a lot is your team and your opponent and how everybody's playing in front of you. But I don't have a specific answer. So that's a long-winded answer that basically says nothing, but your trend is correct.
So the Predators next two games, they play back-to-back for the first time this season. They're at Chicago on Friday. They're home to Columbus on Saturday, which means we should expect to see Scott Wedgwood for the second time this season. And the first time since he started opening night against the Dallas Stars, he had a rough go against the Stars on opening night. Another thing that a lot of Predators fans have talked about over the years is trying to limit the amount of starts that UC Soros makes over the course of the season. He's led the league, if I'm not mistaken, over the previous three seasons, started more games than any other goalie in the NHL. So having a capable backup in Scott Wedgwood is incredibly important. Kevin Lankinen provided that for the Predators over the past couple of seasons. So when Scott Wedgwood gets back in, and if I had to guess, I would say he plays Saturday against the Blue Jackets, but we'll see. What more do you need to see from Wedgewood so that he can provide Saros with some rest down the stretch or over the course of the season, I should say?
Yeah, you got to see. You just got to see a solid game. I thought his game actually, you know, wasn't that bad. I thought there's one goal in the Dallas game. That's a tough situation. You know, sometimes you just throw out the first games because, first of all, he's probably full of nerves. He's playing his old team. It's his first game on a new team. Wasn't supposed to play. Saros was injured, couldn't make it back in time. So there's a lot going on. And I thought, you know, he was really good in the third period when, you know, after they gave up the fourth goal, but he was really good going down the stretch, allowing the guys to kind of stay in the game. So he's got to put in a solid performance. You know, I think a good 60 minutes and obviously ideally a win. And yeah, I'll be very interested to see how they decide to shake it out here on the weekend to see if he gets a game. But, you know, you just have to, one thing when you come to a new team and, you know, especially when we know, you know, how Kevin Lankinen was last year, he was solid. You could put him in there at any moment. And even still, you know, you go to Saros, you know, more often than maybe you probably would have liked or drew it up at the beginning of the season, because it's hard not to throw your best lineup when every game you're trying to win and then jockey for position and all that kind of stuff. But you have to get him a rest, and you have to have a guy that as a coaching staff, you feel you can put in that situation, whether it is the first game in Chicago or whether it's the home game, which is the back-to-back. And I actually think they might go with Wedgewood on Friday and then and run it back with Juice on Saturday, but we'll see. But yeah, he needs to put in get a really good game and hopefully get a win under his belt, because, you know, that's a really important position. And that position is going to have a big impact in where they finish in the standings. You know, whether when it's all said and done, you're trying to climb into one of those top three spots in the division or you're going wild card. So, those points are huge. Whatever games that he plays are just as important as the ones, Saros plays. So you need a good performance, and you know, the better you play, obviously the more comfortable the coaching staff is going to have putting you in there and giving Juice the rest he needs.
Quickly, because I forgot to mention him at the top of the show, Zachary LaRue made his NHL debut last night, played around 10 minutes, one shot on goal, four hits. I specifically recall a spirited shift in the first period where he seemed to be hitting everything that moved. What did you make of Zachary LaRue's NHL debut last night?
I thought he was great. I thought he, you know, you mentioned him, whatever, he played 10 minutes, but I thought you noticed him when he was on the ice. He impacted the game in the way that he had to. He didn't try to force it. You know, that's a lot of times you see that with a young player that has offensive success in the American Hockey League is to try to do a little too much and maybe play that way, you know, in the NHL. I thought he played that perfectly. I thought that line together with him on it, I really felt they missed Kiefer Sherwood, you know, that his energy, the ability to get in and hit. And I thought LaRue brought that. He brought an element to that. And this is a kid that everybody in the organization said last year that he's ready to play. He could play in the NHL. He's a great penalty killer. He's got the physicality. He's a smart heads up player. He's got offensive skill set, and he can get in there and hit with anybody. So really good debut from him. And I think when you listen to him talk, he says he feels ready, and I believe it. You know, this is a guy that thinks he can play in the league, and everybody around the organization agrees, and we'll see. It was a really good debut, strong debut from ZLH.
You mentioned the fourth line. I do think it's important for them to find a combination that works. The Michael McCarron, Cole Smith, Kiefer Sherwood line was a big part of the Predators' success last season. They have not been able to find that combination so far this season. The Predators have been outscored 9-1 at 5-on-5 with Michael McCarron on the ice. Not picking on McCarron specifically, but as the center of that line, the Predators have not had a lot of luck with him and his line on the ice. Coming up next on Preds Insiders, I'm going to give Chris Mason the opportunity to do some shameless plugging of his own podcast. We'll do that next. Adam Vingan with Chris Mason, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vingan with Chris Mason. The Predators are back in action on Friday in Chicago. They'll be back home on Saturday against the Columbus Blue Jackets, easy for me to say, before what it should be a highly emotional game for Steve and Stamkos. The Nashville Predators will be in Tampa Bay on Monday for Steve and Stamkos' return to Amalie Arena, where he played 16 NHL seasons. But Chris, one thing that I've learned so far being a radio host and in my experience as a journalist as well, you have to be a shameless promoter. You have to plug your own stuff. And you and our dear friend Hal Gill have recently launched the Bag Chucker podcast. I know that this is something that is near and dear to your heart as well as Hal's. How is the podcast going? How did you and Hal come up with the idea to have this podcast?
Well, thank you for the shameless plug, but I don't feel any shame in this because I believe in this, okay? And no, this is something that we've talked about doing for the last few years. The whole Bag Chucker thing caught on a few years ago. You know, you go to the hotel, you chuck your bag, you go for a beer, right? That's pretty well it. And we made some funny videos and made some shirts and tried to raise some money for some charities and things like that. But honestly, there's no message behind that, right? So I didn't feel, and we didn't feel that we really had anything of value to bring with that type of messaging. And although that's fun, and you know, from time to time we do that, but that's actually not what our road. I'm more now. I chuck my bag and I go to the gym, and then maybe I'll meet you for dinner, or maybe I'll meet you for a beer here and there, and it's a lot different. So what we wanted to do is, I think we're both at a stage in our life, and you know, with the Bag Chucker thing is we have a message now that we want to share. And you know, I'm producing this thing and trying to figure out all the technical stuff, and we're trying to get all that sorted out. But you know, the message is more of a insight. Obviously, we're going to talk about hockey. That's what we're going to do. But it's also more of a personal journey type of stuff that we're going to share. You know, different things and activities that we do on the road. Maybe, you know, some of the guilt as fathers. You know, with our travel schedule, it's not easy. We both have three kids. You know, we go away for, you know, 10, 11 days sometimes, and you come home and then you've got kids' sports and activities and all these types of things, and just trying to balance that and things that we're doing in our life that are, you know, trying to, you know, self-improvement, you know, just different, you know, health and fitness things, nutrition things that we're trying, and, you know, just trying to be better. You know, we're very flawed, imperfect people, as a lot of us are, I think, in the world. But, you know, we're trying to get better every day, and then we want to start sharing those experiences. And right now we're just getting our feet wet with trying to, you know, record the podcast, get them out. I think we've got about six episodes, but this is something that I think we both believe in. And, you know, I want to share some of, you know, personal stories and journeys and battles and things that I've been through and things that I'm going through. So we finally have a message, I think, that we feel good about sharing, and we're going to try to make a thing of it. And it's been fun so far, but I think the best is yet to come with the Bag Chucker podcast.
It is a tough life to live. I did it for a number of years, traveling to every road game to cover the Nashville Predators. Now, of course, you and Hal and Willie and Lindsay, you fly in style, you travel with the team, you have those accommodations, but still being away from home, especially as you said, as a father, it can be incredibly tough. I mean, the Predators have been at home for the majority of the season so far, but coming up in early October, the Predators have a stretch of, it looks like, 7 of 8 on the road, where you might be gone for 2 weeks. And that's going to be, that's hard, not just on you, but your family as well. So I can certainly relate, but you know, I have to imagine being the producer of a podcast co-hosted by Hal Gill, I can't imagine it's easy to keep Skillsy in line, Chris.
No, it's not. He's a challenge. But, you know, as you guys know, though, maybe I don't want to, you know, sell Skillsy the, you know, the reputation that he has. But he's a smart guy. He's got a big heart. You know, he puts on that tough exterior and that shell, and he does it very well. But, you know, deep down inside, he's a very he's a sentimental guy. He's a great father. You know, he loves his family, and you know, I can accuse him of being a big softy sometimes. We don't see that side of him, but I'm hoping to get, you know, some of that out with you know, on the podcast, and just kind of, you know, seeing a guy like that and myself, you know, be vulnerable and open up about things like that, because it is tough. And sometimes, to be honest with you, it sucks. And, you know, you miss a lot of things in your kid's life, and you have to get, you know, FaceTime, or you get a video of, you know, someone taking of your kid, you know, at a sporting event that you can't be at. And it really, it hurts the heart, you know, and it's a tough way. But this has been my life, and this has been Hal's life for as long as we can remember. This is really all we know. But it's something that I think the older you get too, the more, you know, we really start thinking about these things. And when you're not playing anymore and you're broadcasting, it's a little bit of a different focus. But at the end of the day, you know, in our business, the show must go on. So we go on camera, and you put on a good exterior, and you get into your, you know, your persona, and you do your job, just like when we played hockey. It's very similar. So that helps the routine and having that, you know, when the lights turn on, so to speak, that you're able to turn that on and do something that you love to do. So this is a job that we both love dearly. But it's also comes with its challenges, and we hope to share that. And Skillsy, as tough and as loud as he can get sometimes, he's going through the same thing. So it's going to be fun.
Well, please listen to the Bag Chucker podcast out now. Several episodes already published. Chris, I enthusiastically accept the invitation to be on the Bag Chucker podcast. You haven't given me one yet, but when you inevitably do, I enthusiastically accept.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, we've had Lindsay on a couple times. We're just trying to dial everything technically. Keys, doggy dog, maybe you can help me out with some of the technical stuff, but we want to make sure we got our ducks in a row there. So technically, when we do start having guests, because I think that's important, we've got a lot of good people that we can have on. We just want to make sure that you know, we're not messing with anybody and ruining their days. So we're just trying to iron out the kinks, and then it's go time.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for joining us on this edition of Preds Insiders. The Predators will be back in action Friday night in Chicago before returning home to face the Columbus Blue Jackets on Saturday. For Chris Mason, I'm Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.